to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Global airline profits cut in half, jet fuel at over $8 a gallon, and the alternative investment firm that bankrolled some of aviation's boldest bets just filed for bankruptcy with more than $2 billion in debt. That is the week of August 23rd in aviation.
We're going to break down what that fuel shock is actually doing to the balance sheet separation happening across the sector, look at what Boeing and Lockheed both filed in the same week, and figure out who is actually positioned to survive this environment versus who is just buying time.
Stick with us. There is a lot to unpack. And before we get into it, follow the show wherever you're listening and the next episode finds you automatically.
So let's set the table. This week's narrative was a structural cost shock driven by Middle East airspace disruption and jet fuel prices that have climbed roughly 70% since late February, is now forcing a bifurcation between carriers with the capital structure to absorb it and those without.
And it's not just a fuel story anymore, it is a survival story. Operationally, airlines are making permanent-looking decisions, cutting routes, withdrawing guidance, grounding capacity. Not because demand collapsed, but because cost escalation outpaced every hedging model they had.
Right. And for investors, the question has shifted from will airlines recover to which airlines have the balance sheet depth to outlast this, and which ones are burning through their runway. Those are very different investment theses.
Exactly. And the data this week gives you a clear read on that separation. It is showing up in filing activity, in stock performance, and in the broader industry numbers.
The most important signal this week came from the global airline industry's profitability structure breaking down at scale. IATA has the industry on track for $23 billion in profits this year. That sounds like a lot until you remember it was $45 billion last year. That is a halving.
Operationally, what that means is airlines everywhere are being squeezed between a cost structure that repriced 70% upward and a revenue base that cannot move fast enough. The carriers that had pricing power, strong international premium demand, and clean balance sheets are absorbing the blow. The ones without those things are disappearing.
For investors, a sector-wide margin compression from 4.2% down to 2% resets every valuation model. You cannot hold the same multiples when the margin structure looks like this. And that is what the airline stock performance this week is telling you.
Let's get into those numbers, because the price action this week is really the IATA forecast made visible in ticker form.
TSA screened 11.7 million passengers this week. And here is the thing, that is actually down 0.1% year over year, and 1.3% below the 3-year average. So demand is not the story. People are still flying.
That is the critical point. This is not a demand shock. If it were a demand shock, you would see TSA numbers cratering. Instead, they are basically flat.
But the airlines are still bleeding. Delta fell nearly 3% for the week. United was down about 2.5%. Southwest down nearly the same. JetBlue dropped 3%.
The common pressure behind that coordinated move was the fuel cost environment and the guidance withdrawals that came with it. Americans' revised full-year outlook now brackets everything from a loss of 65 cents per share to a profit of 65 cents per share. That is an enormous range of uncertainty for a company this size.
And that kind of guidance range is essentially telling investors, we do not know what this year looks like. That gives investors very little earnings visibility.
What matters here, and this is what the market is pricing, is not the current quarter. It is whether the carriers who are cutting guidance have enough liquidity to get through a prolonged fuel shock.
Right. And when you look at the performance split, you start to see it. Cargo operators actually had a decent week. UPS was the top performer in the entire universe, up about 2.5% for the week.
Cargo's revenue model is fundamentally more insulated here. You are not selling seats to price-sensitive leisure travelers. You are moving freight on contractual rates with fuel surcharge mechanisms built in.
And the aerostructures names, Hexcel, Howmet, those held up or gained on the week. Hexcel up about 2.5%.
Those are beneficiaries of the production ramp story at the OEM level. The supply chain is still building toward higher rates, even while the airlines flying those planes are under pressure. That is the classic bifurcation inside the aviation supply chain.
The real pain this week was in the eVTOL and low-cost carrier buckets. Archer was the biggest single loser in the universe, down more than 5% for the week. Allegiant dropped more than 3%.
Allegiant and the low-cost carriers broadly are exactly the kind of exposed names you would expect to sell off in this environment. Thin margins, fuel-intensive operations, limited pricing power versus network carriers with premium cabins absorbing the hit.
And eVTOL names are essentially risk-off proxies right now. They carry no near-term revenue to offset cost inflation, so when the macro environment tightens, those stocks give back the most.
HEICO is worth calling out as its own story this week because it filed both an 8K and a 10Q. The stock dropped about 4.5% for the week, with its biggest single session move coming on the 27th, the same day the 10Q landed.
That is a meaningful move for a company like HEICO. That is not a normal week for an aftermarket supplier that usually trades like a steady compounder.
The filing disclosed results for both the 3 months and the 9 months ended July 31st. The detailed financials sit in the exhibit, and that exhibit is not parsed yet. So what the filing establishes is the reporting periods, and what the tape establishes is that the market repriced the name on the day it landed.
The stock gave back ground on the report day. What we do not know yet is what the market reacted to. Margins, guidance, revenue mix, or a valuation that had simply run ahead of the print.
And that is the part I would want confirmed, because HEICO is the aftermarket story. MRO demand, parts availability. My read is that a report day sell-off in that name is worth taking seriously. And if the detailed financials do show margin compression, that would challenge the thesis that aftermarket and MRO are insulated from what is happening to the airlines. The exhibit is what settles it.
Which makes it a question rather than a conclusion. If the sell-off turns out to be margin-driven, the pressure is moving upstream into the supply chain. If it does not, this is one company's quarter.
Exactly. Defense primes were essentially flat. Lockheed and L3Harris barely moved for the week. That defensive stability relative to commercial aviation is the clearest expression of the bifurcation in the market right now.
The real story behind these numbers is that the market is not just repricing jet fuel risk. It is repricing which parts of the aviation ecosystem have structural protection from that risk, and which parts are fully exposed to it.
Cargo, defense, and aerostructures on one side. Airlines, especially low-cost carriers, and high multiple speculative names on the other. And what happened this week deepened that gap.
Let's dig into what Boeing and Lockheed both filed on the same day, because I think that pairing is more revealing than either filing is on its own.
Walk me through it.
So on August 28th, Boeing files an 8K disclosing it entered into a $3 billion, 364-day revolving credit facility, Citibank and JP Morgan as joint lead arrangers. And on the same day, Lockheed Martin files an 8K disclosing it terminated its prior 364-day revolving credit facility and replaced it with a successor agreement. Same $2.25 billion capacity, matures August 23rd, 2027.
On the surface, those look similar. Both renewing short-term credit. Both housekeeping.
Right, but the terms tell completely different stories. Lockheed's facility carries a quarterly fee of 0.04%. It's unsecured. There's an optional one-year extension available at a 50 basis point conversion fee. That is a company negotiating from a position of strength.
Boeing's spread range is 125 to 170 basis points over term SOFR. That is a dramatically wider range, and the fact that it spans that wide tells you about rating sensitivity in the pricing grid.
Commitment fees between 12.5 and 30 basis points depending on credit rating. So the cost of this facility moves materially based on where Boeing sits in the rating agency's view at any given moment. Lockheed's fee structure doesn't have that kind of sensitivity baked in.
That is the thing I want to push on, though. Boeing replacing a maturing facility with an identical size facility on the same day it expires, you could read that as disciplined treasury management. They are not letting the line lapse.
You could, and I think that is the most charitable read. The facility exists, they renewed it, continuity of liquidity access maintained, but the pricing grid tells you what the market actually thinks of Boeing's credit right now. When your spread range tops out at 170 over SOFR on a revolving credit that you hope you never draw, that is not a ringing endorsement.
And the duration is meaningful. 364 days is the standard structure for staying under certain balance sheet classification thresholds. It also means Boeing is back at this table again in under a year.
Which is the part I find most interesting, strategically. Lockheed closed a deal with an optional one-year extension. Boeing is back at the table in August 2027 regardless. And a lot can happen between now and then. Production rates, the 737 recovery trajectory, whether the defense portfolio continues to generate the cash offset.
Stock was basically flat on the week, Boeing down about a third of a percent. The market didn't treat the filing itself as alarming news.
Because it isn't alarming in isolation. But when you put it next to the fuel shock, next to the airline sector profitability numbers, next to the fact that Boeing's commercial customers are the ones under the most pressure right now, the context changes. A rolling 364-day facility is not the credit profile you want when your biggest buyers are withdrawing guidance and grounding capacity.
Right. If the fuel environment stays elevated and the airlines start deferring deliveries more aggressively, Boeing's cash flow picture shifts. And that is exactly when you want your credit facility to have more favorable, more locked-in terms, not a spread range that widens with rating pressure.
Lockheed doesn't have that problem. Defense budget is appropriated. F-35 production cadence is a government contract question, not a fuel price question. The credit facility terms reflect that insulation.
And that is the clearest expression of the bifurcation we keep coming back to. It's showing up not just in stock prices, but in the actual contractual terms on which these companies can access capital. That is a more durable signal than a week of price action.
Now, let's talk about the other corporate governance signal this week, because the JetBlue filing is easy to miss if you're not reading 8Ks closely, but it carries real weight when you put it in context.
The Econ exit.
JetBlue filed on August 27th, disclosing that two board directors tied to Carl Icahn's investment stake submitted irrevocable resignations effective August 24th, Jesse Lin and Stephen D. Miller. The trigger was the Icahn group notifying the airline that its ownership had fallen below the threshold, required to maintain two director appointments under a director appointment and nomination agreement that was originally executed February 16th, 2024.
So Icahn came in about 2.5 years ago, took a stake, got board representation, and now the stake has declined enough that the contractual right to those seats expired.
That is exactly what happened, and the timeline matters here. Icahn got involved when JetBlue was under significant pressure. The Spirit merger collapse, the DOJ litigation, the stock already deeply distressed. The thesis at that point was presumably that there was activist value to unlock.
And what has happened since then? The stock is at $4.80, down 3% just this week. That is not an activist turnaround story that delivered.
The irrevocable resignation structure is worth noting too. These are not directors who stepped down to pursue other opportunities. The resignations are contractually irrevocable and tied explicitly to the ownership threshold trigger. The Icahn group decided to reduce the stake, cross the line, and the board seats went with it.
The question I keep coming back to is what the reduced stake signals about Icahn's raid on JetBlue. My raid is that surrendering contractual board rights after letting the stake fall below the threshold, in this fuel environment, with the stock at 480, is difficult to interpret as bullish. The filing establishes the threshold breach and the resignations. It does not establish what Icahn thinks.
I think that is the right read, but I want to be fair about what we don't know. We don't have the disposition details. Whether this was a structured wind down of the position or a response to fund level liquidity needs entirely unrelated to JetBlue's fundamentals.
That is a fair caveat, but the timing is hard to ignore. JetBlue is exactly the kind of carrier that is maximally exposed to the current fuel shock. Thin balance sheet, limited premium revenue, high cost per available seat mile relative to the network carriers. If you are an activist investor reassessing where to deploy capital in this environment, JetBlue's risk profile has gotten worse, not better.
And the market has been saying exactly that. 3% down on the week. The stock is trading at levels where any equity value erosion is felt immediately because there is so little cushion.
What the governance change actually does operationally is reduce the external pressure on management to execute a specific strategic agenda. Whether that is good or bad depends entirely on what you thought of the icon agenda for the airline.
Which we don't have full visibility into. But the loss of two board seats tied to an activist position in the middle of a sector-wide profitability crisis removes a layer of accountability that, at minimum, was asking hard questions from inside the boardroom.
And that is the part of this filing that I think deserves more attention than it got. It is not just a routine board change. A governance structure an activist negotiated in 2024 has now unwound in the middle of a sector-wide profitability squeeze. What that says about the investor's confidence is our inference. What the filing establishes is that the oversight is gone.
Filed on a Wednesday, probably read by a fraction of the people who saw the Boeing credit facility story. But in some ways, it tells you more about where JetBlue is headed than any quarterly earnings update would.
The Southwest Form 4 is worth a brief mention in contrast because it reads completely differently. Officer-level insider buying at current market prices, small transaction, but it's movement in the opposite direction from what we're seeing with the icon position.
Right. A discretionary open market purchase is the transaction type that carries the most information because nobody is required to make one. My read is that it reads as constructive, though the filing records the purchase, not the reasoning behind it.
Compared to the United CCO sale, Nocella disposing of roughly 2.3% of his direct holding, you get two completely different reads from two Form 4 filings in the same sector in the same week against the same macro backdrop.
And that divergence between insider behavior at Southwest versus United is something we'll come back to when we get into the divergence signals. Because the stock performance separation between those two carriers this week is telling a related story.
So let's make that explicit, because I think the divergence picture this week is actually sharper than it looks on the surface. You have carriers moving in the same direction for very different reasons, and the market is starting to separate them.
Walk me through where you see the clearest split.
Start with the major airlines. Delta down nearly 3% for the week. United down 2.6. Southwest down 2.6. JetBlue down 3%. On the surface, that looks like a sector-wide sell-off. And in one sense, it is. But underneath that, the drivers are completely different.
Right, because Delta and United are selling off on margin compression from fuel cost. They still have premium revenue. They still have strong load factors. They're just being squeezed on the cost side. Southwest and JetBlue are selling off on something structurally harder to fix.
Exactly. Southwest model is built on point-to-point, no-frills, high-frequency domestic flying. That is the most fuel-intensive revenue profile you can have without a premium cabin to offset it. And JetBlue, we just spent 10 minutes on the governance signal coming out of that name. These are not the same risk.
And when you put the insider behavior next to the stock moves, the direction of travel differs. Southwest officer buying on the open market at current prices. United's CCO selling 2.3% of his direct holding. A small trim that leaves the overwhelming majority of the position intact.
So, is this cyclical positioning? Insiders at different carriers reading the same fuel shock differently? Or is this structural differentiation? Is this cyclical positioning or structural differentiation?
I think the honest answer is both, and the market hasn't fully separated them yet. The cyclical component is real. Fuel comes back down, every carrier gets relief, and the stocks recover. But the structural piece is that some of these carriers have used the post-pandemic recovery to build balance sheet depth and revenue diversification, and some of them didn't.
Delta and United used the recovery window. Southwest spent years fighting culture and strategy battles internally. JetBlue fought the DOJ, watched the Spirit deal collapse, and never rebuilt the capital cushion.
And that structural difference is now being exposed by a cost shock that isn't going away next quarter. The Middle East airspace disruption that's driving the fuel premium isn't a two-week event.
On the supply chain side, the divergence runs the other direction. Hexel up 2.5%. Howmet up about 0.5%. UPS, top gainer in the entire universe at 2.5%. Meanwhile, Heiko down 4.5% on its own earnings.
So even inside the names that should benefit from continued production ramp, you're getting differentiation on company-specific news rather than on the macro. HECO's aftermarket story got repriced on earnings week, and the exhibit that would explain why is not parsed yet. That much is not a macro signal. It is a company-specific one.
Which actually makes the divergence more nuanced, not less. The simple story is defense and supply chain good, airlines bad. The real story is that even within the good bucket, individual fundamentals are reasserting themselves.
Defense primes essentially flat. Lockheed down a fraction, L3Harris down essentially zero. Northrop down 0.2%. That flatness in the face of a sector under pressure is its own signal. Capital is rotating towards stability, not chasing upside in this environment.
And the eVTOL names, Archer down more than 5%, Joby down nearly 3%, those are pure risk-off casualties. No revenue buffer, no hedge, just multiple compression when the macro tightens.
So the base case is that the airline sector bifurcation deepens over the next 2 to 3 quarters as the fuel shock persists, rewarding balance sheet depth and premium revenue mix over volume and frequency. But the key risk is that a faster than expected de-escalation in the Middle East airspace situation brings fuel prices back below $7 and compresses the spread between the strong and weak carriers before the structural separation has time to fully price in.
That is exactly the setup going into the week ahead, because several of the data points coming up could either confirm the bifurcation thesis or start to unwind it. Let me walk through the 4 things I am watching.
Let's hear them.
Watch Heiko's full 10Q exhibit disclosure, because it will confirm or contradict whether the report day sell-off was about margin compression in aftermarket and MRO, or about something else entirely.
That is the one that settles our open question. If the margins are holding, the supply chain half of this thesis gets more complicated.
Watch any updated airline guidance revision from Delta or United in the next 2 weeks, because it will confirm or contradict whether the major network carriers with premium exposure are actually insulated from the fuel shock or just slower to feel it.
And the guidance is what moves the thesis. A single officer's trim tells us far less than what the carriers themselves put in writing.
Watch Middle East airspace development and any IATA or DOT commentary on fuel cost trajectory into Q4, because it will confirm or contradict whether the current fuel premium is persistent enough to force the structural network pruning that airlines are implying but not yet executing at full scale.
That is the one that changes everything. If fuel moves back towards $6, the risk-reward across this sector reshuffles inside a quarter.
Watch JetBlue's next operational filing or investor communication following the Icon board exit, because it will confirm or contradict whether management can signal a credible independent turnaround path without that activist oversight in the room.
That is the item I would want answered before deciding what the governance change actually means for the equity.
So let me bring this together, because I think the synthesis is actually pretty clean this week, even though the individual signals are complex.
Go ahead.
The week of August 23rd gave us a sector under structural cost pressure, with capital markets differentiating not by sector label, but by balance sheet depth. The companies that use the recovery window to build financial resilience are holding, and the ones that didn't are being separated out by a fuel shock that has no near-term resolution.
And the filing evidence supports that thesis at every level. Credit facility terms, insider behavior, governance changes, earnings reactions, it is all pointing in the same direction.
The analytical frame for the week ahead is this. The demand signal is not broken, 11.7 million passengers screened, flat year over year. But the cost signal is severe enough that demand alone cannot save carriers without the capital structure to bridge the gap.
Which means the next round of earnings and guidance revisions will matter more than the macro data. We are past the point where investors are asking whether fuel is expensive. They are asking who survives it at this price.
If this breakdown helped you think more clearly about what actually moved the sector this week and why, follow the show so the next episode finds you automatically. Disclaimer: Aviation Intelligence Weekly is produced for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing in this episode constitutes investment advice, a solicitation to buy or sell any security, or a recommendation of any financial product. All data referenced, including stock prices, insider filings, TSA checkpoint figures, and regulatory disclosures, is sourced from publicly available information and is believed to be accurate as of the date of broadcast, but is not independently verified. Past performance of any security or sector is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own due diligence and consult a qualified financial professional before making any investment decision. The hosts and producers of Aviation Intelligence Weekly may hold positions in securities discussed in this episode. This program is not affiliated with, endorsed by, or connected to any airline, manufacturer, or regulatory body mentioned herein. Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.